Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on this Thursday, April the 9th, 2026, 4-9-26. 12 coming up on 13 minutes past the hour, and so glad this hour to be joined by the guest we're going to go to here momentarily. He is a former United States representative. He is a former candidate for governor on the Republican ticket here in Ohio back in 2022. And with everything going on in the world, he is certainly somebody we want to talk to. Just to catch everybody up, this is the short version, but on Easter Sunday morning, there was a Truth Social post sent out by the president warning Iran that within 48 hours, if they did not open the Strait of Hormuz, that a whole civilization was going to be eliminated. And 6:30 p.m. came on Tuesday, about 90 minutes before that 8 p.m. deadline on Tuesday night arrived. The president said a ceasefire had been arranged by Pakistan with Iran. And the next morning, and the last two mornings, to be honest with you, we're not really sure exactly what's going on. It appears as if the Strait of Hormuz has not been opened freely, that it is still under military control, that vessels might still be being charged to go through there. Lebanon is under fire from Israel, as near as we can tell. Iran says that's not part of the deal. And at this point, the president and the administration don't seem to be saying a whole lot. So it's kind of hard to know exactly what's going on, as this ceasefire that we came to on Tuesday night only lasts 2 weeks. So what happens in about 10, 11 days? Nobody knows. We turn this morning to, as I said, former U.S. Representative and candidate for governor, Republican Jim Renacci, to get his thoughts on this. Jim, how you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good. Doing well. Jim, what do you make of everything that's been going on the last few days? Everything since February 28th, let's go way back with Iran. When this all started, what did you think, and take us up through current times?
Well, first, I got to give President Trump credit for trying to do something after 47 years to end Iran having a nuclear weapon. Now, that was the starting point, and I think the idea, the prospect, and what he was trying to do was the right thing to do. How he did it was probably the problem. And I say that because I've said many times, you know, when you have somebody like Pete Hegseth, I give him all the credit in the world for serving our country and doing what he had done in the military to support our country. That's one thing. But having the military ability to understand the complications of the Middle East and the Strait of Hormuz and what could happen is where I see probably the biggest weakness was. So I believe President Trump thought he would be able to get this done quickly, and he found out that that Iran does not have to win a military battle. They can win a geographic battle by just controlling the Strait of Hormuz, and I think that's where we're at right now. We may have decimated much of their military capabilities, but keep in mind, they are a large military. Their country is almost 50% military, and I think in the end, we underestimated the timetable, and that's why we're sitting here almost 6 weeks later without a conclusion to this situation.
What do you believe happened on Tuesday night? Tuesday morning, the president said an entire civilization will be obliterated tonight at 8 p.m. if a deal is not reached. It doesn't look as if that deal was reached now, but at 6:30, a ceasefire came into being. Do you think the president ever planned truly on bombing Iran on Tuesday night?
No, I don't believe that. I think that the president was using his tactics of pushing military force to try and get Iran to come to the table and end this thing. I'm not sure I would have agreed with those tactics either. But again, he's the president. He can do what he wants, and he can attempt to do that. But this is the way. One of the things we have to get used to is we have a president who doesn't follow the norms of past presidents. And I'm not saying that's bad or good. In some instances, it could be good. In some instances, it's bad. This is probably one of those situations. I'm not sure the threat of totally destroying the civilization was the right approach, especially with Iran, who, as we know, and even in my time in Congress, they do not, they think much different than we think. The sanctity of life there is not as important as it is here, and they believe, of course, that doing things to support their country gets them to heaven, even if it's a suicide mission or suicide battle. So I think in the end, we're dealing with a radical religious military front versus a normal military front, as other countries would be.
Now, I just want to read the beginning of President Trump's Truth Social post from Tuesday when the ceasefire was brought about. He said, based on conversations with Prime Minister Sharif of Pakistan, and wherein they requested that I hold off destructive force being sent to Iran, tonight to Iran, and subject to the Islamic Republic of Iran agreeing to the complete, immediate, and safe opening of the Strait of Hormuz, I agree to suspend the bombing and attack of Iran for a period of 2 weeks. Now, the important line in here, obviously, is that subject to the Islamic Republic of Iran agreeing to the complete, immediate, and safe opening of the Strait of Hormuz. That's what got the two-week ceasefire Tuesday night. Here we are Thursday morning. Has that happened? Has the Strait of Hormuz been complete, immediate, and safe opening? Has that happened?
Well, look, the White House is saying it has. The press is saying it hasn't. Iran is saying it hasn't, so I think we're getting conflicting stories. It does appear very few ships are going through there at this point. I still think there is a fear because of the bombings that are still going on in the Middle East, Lebanon being bombed by Israel, Iran saying that was part of the deal, that would cease, and it hasn't ceased. There's a lot of confusion. And I think the confusion comes because we don't really have a written deal. We have a deal that was brokered by Pakistan. Nothing's in writing. All the pivotal points aren't in writing. And there's a lot of assumptions going on, which is also probably a major mistake in this situation. Because without something in writing, everybody can assume things, and that's exactly what's going on right now.
You know, one of the things that I heard a very ardent Trump supporter say yesterday was that because Tuesday night did not happen, the attack on Iran, and because it appears as if the Strait of Hormuz is not open freely, and because we don't have a written agreement at this particular point, that if that was a military tactic, as I believe you said you thought it was, to get them to come to the table, that he can't do that again in 2 weeks, because even if he does, nobody's going to believe it if he threatens Iran militarily again.
Well, look, I've said that all along. We have moved the line multiple times. When President Obama did this in Libya, Republicans were upset. I was in Congress at the time. People were saying, this is not the way. You can't move the line. And, of course, we continue to move the line. And I think that's one of the things that's coming back as an embarrassment to President Trump, is that he has moved his line multiple times. And, you know, in negotiations, I don't care if you're the book writer of The Art of the Deal or not. When you're moving the line, people realize that your negotiations aren't valid because you'll just move it again. And I think President Trump has lost a little bit of ground by doing this.
Mr. Renacci, one thing I want to talk about is how this is all going to end now. What do you think is going to happen in less than 2 weeks?
Look, I do believe that President Trump needs to get out of this. There is no value to continuing this war. He's lost the credibility from the American people. That's what polling shows. That's not what Jim Renacci is saying. But, you know, Republicans and Democrats are questioning what we're able to do here. He has sent his Department of Defense, Department of War, Pete Hegseth, out to say we won. We saw that yesterday where we won victory with a capital V. So we're moving toward saying we decimated Iran and we're going to move away from the country. I believe President Trump's best move is to get away from this situation. Now, there's a November election coming up. None of this will be good for Republicans if President Trump continues down this path, especially if oil prices continue to surge and the stock market continues to, you know, pull back. So these are the things that President Trump has to be looking at. And his best move is to get away, say we won, and move forward. Now, is that the best move for the world? Is that the best move for the region? Probably not. Because now we've stirred up this hornet's nest, and to walk away will be problematic as well. But in President Trump's eyes, I think he needs to get away.
Jim, one thing that people are asking themselves, why did this start? A lot of people feel it was the urging of Netanyahu. A lot of people feel that President Trump might have some gain in this in some way. It certainly has not been good for the Republican Party, with gas prices topping $4 in a lot of places here in Ohio and $10 in certain parts of the country, including California. With elections coming up this year, a primary in which pretty much all statewide seats are being primaried, including the governor here in Ohio, and a big election coming up in less than 6 months, why do this now? Why did President Trump do this now?
Well, I do believe, and again, I don't know exactly. No one knows what was in President Trump's mind. I do know that he was, of course, being talked to by the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. I believe, like Venezuela, he thought he could go in, get a couple things done in a few days, and get out. That probably was the reason. You know, it worked in Venezuela. I believe he thought it could work in Iran. His advisor, Pete Hegseth, probably said, yes, we can get this done. And that's the reason he did it. I do not believe President Trump ever thought that 6 weeks later we'd be still there. And I think that's where the mistake was made. But again, he has advisors. He's got to look to those advisors that gave him this advice and make decisions in the future as to whether those advisors he should listen to or not in the future.
I want to talk about the Truth Social post from Easter morning, because this upset a lot of people. Obviously, Easter, probably the holiest day in this country without question. The tweet from Easter Sunday, our Truth Social post, I should say. Tuesday will be Power Plant Day and Bridge Day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. There will be nothing like it. Oping the effing straight, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. Praise be to Allah, President Donald J. Trump. And, of course, effing was spelled out on Easter morning. What did you make of this, Jim?
Well, for me personally, it was unacceptable on Easter morning, or any morning, actually. I mean, I don't believe the President of the United States should ever post anything like that. But again, this is the President that was elected, and people have to understand that this is the way he responds in many ways. Again, it's not what we expect from a president, but he is changing expectations from presidents. So that's the key, and that's one of the concerns I have going forward. A lot of the things that the Trump administration is doing, which whether people agree to it or disagree with it, my biggest gripe is that we're setting precedents for the future, whether it's tariffs, whether it's bombings, all of this without getting congressional approval. Future presidents will always look back and say, President Trump did it, I can do it too. And I think that's one of the issues that I have the biggest concern with, is that we are setting so much precedent, especially even in communication, that we may have set things definitely different for the future and future presidents.
Jim, I believe you were the first here in Ohio back in 2015 to endorse then Donald Trump's run for the presidency. You have been a big supporter of his for a long time. Have a personal relationship maybe with him to this day. Do you still have a personal relationship with him?
I have not talked to him in a while, but I would still believe that if I ran into him, you know, he would remember me and we'd be able to communicate. But no, I have not talked to him in a long time.
But all that being said, is this the guy you supported? Is this the guy you wanted? Has he been the president you wanted him to be?
Well, I will say that President Trump's first term, he was exactly the president I wanted him to be. I was a little concerned about his second term and the way he was presenting himself to be more of a president that was going to go after people versus realizing that he won. I would have loved the current president, Trump, to be the one who said, you know what, it's history, you people came after me. Now, a lot of people say, look, what they did to President Trump, he should do all this. Well, I disagree with that. I think if he would have just looked forward, forgotten the past, put some good advisors around him, which I think is also another problem. He put loyalists around him instead of good advisors. He had great advisors around him in the first 4 years. Now, there are some people who disagree, but, you know, I was with him during that time. I met with many of those advisors. They were good, solid people who didn't agree with him all the time, and that's why there was a lot of changeover. So the current president, I still believe his heart is in the right place. I think he has the wrong people around him, a lot of inexperience around him, and a lot of loyalists around him, which gives me some pause at this point, and I'm hoping that some of that changes, which we're starting to see some change over in his administration.
Jim, if an election were held today for President Trump, would you vote for him?
Well, the answer to that would be, who's he running against and what are our choices? I always believe that President Trump has the best, he wants to do what's best for the country, but I would always, in any election, need to see who was running against him, and if there was somebody that had the same goals, same positions, might do it different, I would have to look at that. But I think that's in any election, not just a president's election. Every election, you've got to look at who the people are that's running. And by the way, Scott, I'm a big believer that sometimes when you have two people running and both of them are bad, you don't vote for either of them. You vote for somebody who may not be on the ballot, but why vote in a case of a situation? So my opinion on voting has changed. It's not a binary choice. It's voting for the person who is best qualified to get the job done. So depending on who President Trump was running against, I would make that decision.
Jim, could you give me a grade on the president during his first term, and how would you grade him now?
Well, look, his first term, I would give him a lot of solid grades, A's and B's, some C's, just because of not getting the right people around and getting the right things done. This term, I give him some A's in definitely in border, but a lot of the other areas, C's, maybe even D's. I mean, I'm not a fan of tariffs. Never was. Wasn't a fan in his first term. I sat with him and told him why I wasn't a fan. I believe they are a hidden tax to the American people. Definitely in that area. It's a D for sure from the standpoint of tariffs. But, you know, there are some A's mixed in there. I think his grade overall would be, his average grade for me would be a little lower than it was for the first 4 years. I've said time and time again, if we had President Trump 45 in the position of 47, doing what he was doing in 45, remember, the market was climbing. The economy was booming. Prices, gas prices were falling. All of those things. If we just had that all back, I think everybody in our country would be very happy today.
Jim, what would be your overall grade of the handling of the Iran situation?
Intent, I'd give him an A, but actually the action, I'd probably give him a C-minus, what has transpired. I mean, the intent of stopping Iran, who has really been at war with us for 47 years, you know, I got to give him an A for the intent and what he was trying to get done. Many presidents wouldn't have done this, but I think we're finding out now why many presidents didn't do it, and the approach and how he's handled it, probably a C-minus or D at this stage.
Jim, I want to come here to Ohio because we've got a primary coming up on Cinco de Mayo in less than a month now. And last time we spoke, you had some very interesting insights into some of these primary races, including the gubernatorial race. Vivek Ramaswamy has spent $10 million in an ad drop in recent months. He also has a primary challenger in Casey Putsch. A lot of people don't feel that's going to go very far, but Ramaswamy does not seem to be doing very well in the polls. He hasn't led a poll against Amy Acton in quite some time, although it does remain very, very tight. What do you make of what's going on with Ramaswamy, the $10 million ad drop, the primary challenge coming up on May the 5th, and a lot of Republicans, seemingly a division in the Republican Party here in Ohio? I've heard staunch Republicans refer to him as Ramaswampy. What happened with the campaign of Vivek Ramaswamy?
Well, look, I think Vivek has a lot of good ideas. And to be honest, full disclosure, I was actually working with Vivek last year, giving him some of my plans that I see he's pushing forward with, whether it is, you know, schools and real estate tax. All of these issues were issues that I brought up when I ran for governor in 2022, and he's taking many of those and is bringing them back. So I really support many of those ideas. The biggest problem Vivek has right now is that Republicans, which, you know, he's going to represent the Republican Party, Republicans are way underwater with the American people and primarily with independents. You know, nationally, the independents have grown to about 45%, but in Ohio, independents are about 72% right now of all registered voters. So independents have an approval rating of somewhere between 24 and 28% of President Trump. And because of that, independents also, if you poll them, want to punish the Republican Party for not controlling Donald Trump. Well, Vivek is running as a Republican, so some of that backlash is coming against him. And there are many Republicans who are saying, I'm not even going to vote. That's a real problem. Independents are saying, I'm not going to vote for a Republican. And in the end, we're coming up to almost a similar situation of 2018 when I ran, when I was asked to run for Senate, got out of the governor's race, went in the Senate race. 2018 ended up being a D+8 year for Democrats, and they swept races across the country. They took the House, almost took the Senate. I think we kept it by one seat, and it was a disaster for Republicans. I think we're heading in that same place right now. Now, the good thing about politics is things change every 30 days, so this could change as well. But right now, we have a situation where Republicans are not looked at very favorably, and because of that, Vivek Ramaswamy gets a little bit of that headwind that he's going to have to overcome, which is one of the reasons why I think he went ahead and did the $10 million ad buy. I mean, he almost has to, at this point, to you know, change the perspective. And if I were him, and I've mentioned this multiple times to him last year, I mean, he almost has to run his own race apart from being associated with Donald Trump, because at this stage, President Trump will be absolutely a drag on the Republican ticket.
That's very interesting, because that may be one of the first times that's happened here in Ohio. And, of course, Vivek has been endorsed by President Trump, and those were the ads we saw last year. But you feel at this point that will be a drag to Vivek Ramaswamy to keep associating himself with President Trump?
Well, keep in mind that in 2018, if you were associated with President Trump, it was also a drag. I mean, I was endorsed by President Trump. I was supported by President Trump in a Senate race. And I lost that race to Sherrod Brown because of that. I think, you know, John Husted has the exact same problem going into this race as well.
Jim, I want to ask you, at this point, because of everything you've just said, can Vivek Ramaswamy win this race? Do you think he will win this race? And at this point, do you endorse him as your candidate?
So at this time, I do think he will win. In fact, I think he's going to win. I think the Democrats have put up a candidate who is not qualified. I think if there was a stronger candidate, which I'm not sure if there is one, but if there was one, I think Vivek Ramaswamy would have more issues than he's going to have. But I also believe he needs to run his campaign that like he's running it, talk to the people about the things he wants to get accomplished. And I appreciate that he's using a lot of my former ideas as well, because I do think that's the only way to fix the state. Look, 6-7 years after Governor DeWine took office, which is what I complained about in 2018, and which is what I complained about in 2022, we have not improved our state. We are still probably anywhere between 36th and 45th in rankings with other states when it comes to jobs and the economy and education and all of these issues. So I think Vivek Ramaswamy has an opportunity to actually change the state to a much, much better state.
Do you endorse Vivek at this point?
Absolutely. I've been a big supporter of Vivek. I think he actually is the only candidate out of the two that are running. Now, it's not taking from Casey. I think Casey Pooch has some great ideas as well, but I just don't believe an outside candidate with no money or nobody knows him can win in the state of Ohio. And I actually talked to him, met with him, and told him the exact same thing. He didn't appreciate it, but it was factual. You can't win in Ohio if people don't know you. And most people do not know him. They don't know his positions. And I think that's going to be a problem for him, which is why I see Vivek is really running his campaign against Amy Acton, which is what he should be doing.
You know, Jim, you said something, I think, when you were on in December that a lot of people found interesting. You said that you had private conversations with Vivek, and you said that his Hindu religion is going to be a problem in certain counties that he needs to win overwhelmingly. Do you think it still will be a problem, and do you think he's addressed that, or how can he address that?
Yeah, I don't know how well he's addressed it. I do believe it can be a problem for him. Hopefully, people look at the candidates and make a decision, but as I think I said in December, Romney had serious problems in Ohio, because he was not a Christian, and I think he, and of course we know he lost Ohio because of that. So I think in the end that will play a part, and Vivek will have to continue to address that. He has done some of that by bringing on a lieutenant governor who is a Christian lieutenant governor, so I know he's working toward that, but it'll be interesting. I guess I can't answer how people will end up voting in the end.
Jim, I want to talk about another race here in Ohio, because I think it's emblematic of what's going on in the Republican Party, and that's the treasurer's race. There will be a primary on May the 5th for the Republicans. You have Jay Edwards, who's endorsed by Vice President J.D. Vance, and you have Christina Rogner, who is endorsed by Vivek Ramaswamy. Now, who do you see taking this race, and how is it that the gubernatorial candidate has endorsed one primary candidate and the Vice President of the United States has endorsed the other?
Well, I think what happened here is Logner was very supportive of Vivek in the beginning, and you know he rewarded her by endorsing her. On the other hand, you know, J.D. Vance had nothing to do with that situation, and Vice President Vance has a relationship with Edwards and made that decision. So two different situations, two different reasons for endorsing.
So who do you think is going to take this primary in less than a month?
Well, I would believe, and I've said this, money is going to matter. Endorsements don't matter as much unless they're coming from the vice president. So my opinion is that this race strongly favors Jay Edwards.
Will Jay Edwards be a good candidate in the main against Seth Walsh going into November?
I think it's going to be, look, Jay Edwards, along with any other Republican running in a race in November, is going to have a headwind. And the headwind's coming, of course, from the national tendency and the independents who do not, are not comfortable with Republicans and how they're handling President Trump. So I think there will be obstacles, but I think Jay Edwards will also have the money, which is going to be so important. Similar to Vivek Ramaswamy, it's sad to say, but in elections, money clearly does matter, and Jay Edwards will have the money, and so will Vivek Ramaswamy have the money to present their position better than their opponents, which will give them the edge.
Want to go to one more race here, Jim, because recently you've been very critical of Senator Husted about things that he has said. I think at one point you even paraphrased that he should not have been picked to fill that position, J.D. Vance's position as senator. Running against Sherrod Brown, certainly a known commodity, somebody you know very well. How do you see that one shaking out, and why so critical of Husted at this point?
Well, my criticism comes from candidates who run for something, and then when they realize they can't win, they switch to something else. We have that even in the treasurer's race today. I'm not saying the treasurer, no, the secretary of state's race. I mean, Sprague was running for governor. Until he found out he couldn't beat Vivek Ramaswamy, he was running for governor. He switches to the secretary of state's race. I'm not a supporter of somebody who switches and runs just because they know they can't win. Senator Husted falls in that same category. Here's a guy who was raising millions and millions of dollars to be governor until he found out that he could not beat Vivek Ramaswamy. He decided that the Senate position was the best place for him. These type of candidates are candidates who actually just want to be elected in a position. They're not qualified in many ways, and they only do it because they know they can continue their political career. Those type of candidates I never support because I believe those aren't the type that we really need. We need people who are running for Senate because they want to run for Senate, are in the game to be a senator because they want to be a senator, and that just wasn't Senator Husted. He wanted to be governor, and I believe he should have just stayed in the governor's race.
Can he defeat Sherrod Brown?
That race is going to be very, very difficult for Senator Husted, and it's one of the problems that I've criticized him is his commentary on TV is horrible. You know, he talks about how poor people cannot make it and the reasons why. I mean, these are the kind of things that if you're running against somebody like Sherrod Brown, you at least have to stay on top of your game. Now, the positive things for Senator Husted is that he's going to have money. When Jim Renacci ran against Sherrod Brown, it was a $60 million race against a $6 million race. I ended up getting no support from the National Party. John Husted will get a tremendous amount of support from the National Party, but I also believe that Sherrod Brown will get a tremendous amount of support from the National Party. So it's going to be difficult. The headwinds are going to be against Husted, and I think in the end, if Husted doesn't come out and present himself a little bit different, that he will have a difficult time in November.
Jim, obviously you've just stated why you're not a fan of John Husted, obviously not a fan of Sherrod Brown. In that particular race, who do you see yourself voting for, supporting?
Well, those are the type of races that I talked about earlier. I am not a binary choice. If there are candidates that both candidates will, I believe, are bad, there are many times I don't support either candidate. I know there are some that will criticize and say, well, that just means you're going to support the Democrat, or that just means you're really throwing your vote away. Well, I think if you vote for two bad candidates, I always chuckle. I said this to a pastor the other day. The pastor told me, sometimes, Jim, you have to vote for the lesser of the two evils. And I said, Pastor, do you support evil? And he says, absolutely not. I go, well, you just said you got to support the lesser of two evils. And I'll never forget his response was, wow, I never thought about it that way. So, in the end, I think people have to make their decisions, but sometimes neither of the decisions are appropriate, and I have made the decision, not always, but in some cases, just to not cast a vote in that race, or cast a vote for somebody I believe would be better.
Well, let me ask you that. Could you ever see yourself voting at this point, with only 6 months left to go, for Sherrod Brown or John Husted?
Well, I can't see myself voting for Sherrod Brown, so that's an easy one. And the question will be, you know, where and how John Husted presents himself. I have a very difficult time, again, supporting candidates who jump into other seats just because they know they can't win in the seat they're in. And I think that's wrong, and I think that, you know, that's a character flaw I really don't want in somebody as an elected official.
Jim, how bad has President Trump hurt the Republican Party's chances in Ohio, but I guess all across the country, of keeping a majority in Congress, keeping a majority in the Senate, and keeping, here in Ohio, all state seats Republican? How much damage has President Trump done?
Well, keep in mind that midterms are always a problem for the party in power in the White House. So 85% of the time, the party in power in the White House loses the House or the Senate. That's 85% of the time. Now, President Trump has added more to that because he's lost so much support from independents that I think that we most likely, now things can change, and that's one thing about politics. Everything in politics is a 30-day window, not a 6-month window, not a 5-month window. There'll be two or three other major things that occur between now and November that will give people pause and make them decide on how they're going to vote in November. But if the election was today, I think President Trump and what has happened with independents and some Republicans, his approval rating among Republicans has softened as well. So I think that will cause Republicans to have some problems in November. But we still have a few months and an opportunity for change. We'll see what happens.
Final question, Jim. President Trump is going to put his name on the money coming up here in summer as we approach the 250th anniversary of this country. The treasurer's name has been on the money for 160-plus years. The treasurer's name is coming off the money. Do you like this? Do you think it's a good idea?
Well, it's another thing that I'm a little disappointed in President Trump, but again, he was elected. He can do whatever he wants. He's putting his name on a lot of things that, in my opinion, should be left for others to put his name on, not him. In many situations, we honor past presidents by putting their names on things. I think this is another issue that I'm not supportive of, but at the same time, he was elected president. He has the power to do it. He can do what he wants. It's the response I tell most people are, once he's elected, he has a lot of power, and he can use that power to do some of the things you may not want him to do, but he certainly can do, and this is one of them.
Former U.S. Representative Jim Renacci. Jim, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for coming on, and hope you have you back real soon.
Thank you so much. You have a good day.
Bye-bye. Jim Renacci, well, very interesting stuff there. And now we've got to make a transition very quickly here, because yesterday on the campaign trail, I had a chance to speak with one of the men we were just talking about, the man who is running for senator, who was a senator here in Ohio, and he was recently here in Marion, Sherrod Brown. So here is my interview yesterday with former Senator Sherrod Brown. This is Scott Spears, and today we're joined by former senator here in the state of Ohio, Sherrod Brown. Senator Brown, good to be with you.
Scott, good to be back. Thank you.
Senator Brown, a lot of people are curious. Why are you running for office again?
I realize as the year wore on that Ohio doesn't have a senator that stands up for farmers, for workers, for consumers. And we have, the incumbent senator, John Husted, is a special interest guy. He stands up for the insurance industry. He stands up for Wall Street. He stands up for oil companies and drug companies. As a result, Ohioans don't feel well represented in Washington.
Senator Brown, you recently made an appearance here in Marion, a visit to Marion at our Poet plant. You talked with farmers. Tell us a little bit about that visit.
Yeah, I grew up in Mansfield, a city just like Marion. Same sports conference, in fact. And what happened in Mansfield has happened in Marion, too, where industries have moved overseas because of bad trade policy. But I was in Marion specifically at the Poet plant, which is the largest of three plants in the state that turn corn into ethanol. And so it's a growth industry. It's really important, particularly with what's happened to the Strait of Hormuz with oil prices and diesel prices. So I wanted to see more. I've been to the plant once before. I wanted to see up close how they do it, how farmers, the impact on farmers in terms of price of corn and markets for corn. And we've seen Ohio agriculture. Farmers will tell you overwhelmingly that things are worse than they were a year ago. And they know that John Husted hasn't stood up for them, losing markets because of tariffs, costs going up because of diesel prices, because of the Iran war in part, prices going up for fertilizer at planting season. So you know what this means for much of rural Ohio.
President Trump, just last night, we're taping this on Wednesday afternoon, had a deadline for the people of Iran. The situation there is very hostile, to say the least. What do you make of the rhetoric that President Trump used on Easter morning, used yesterday morning, right up until the 8 o'clock deadline last night? And what do you think happened last night with the president coming to a two-week ceasefire?
Well, I don't think we know what that means. Most importantly, the president has to explain to the American public and to those soldiers and Marines and sailors we're sending to the Middle East, have to explain why we're there. He still hasn't done that. Still don't know what's going to happen in the Straits of Hormuz. There's no question, because of this war, oil prices for motorists, for drivers, have gone up $1 a gallon, more than that in Ohio. Prices for diesel have gone up, which is mostly for truckers, over-the-road truckers, and for farmers. Prices of diesel have gone up even more than that. And fertilizer is farmers can't get fertilizer. They can't get it at any reasonable price. So all of that's causing inflation to continue to go up. And I wish the president would spend more time on that and less time on foreign policy when we don't even know what the intent is here.
Senator Brown, a lot of people, including Governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, have said the 25th Amendment should be invoked on the president. What do you think?
That's kind of inside baseball. I'm not really focused on what's happened. My focus is, how do we get the president, how do we get Husted, how do we get the Congress to pay attention to farmers and to workers and to consumers who have overwhelmingly understand the system is more rigged. It's been rigged for a long time against workers, against consumers, against employees everywhere, but it's gotten worse. How do we get Congress and the president to focus on keeping prices down? They haven't done that at all because of attacks on Venezuela and on attacks in Iran and all those things. I just wish there was a more focus on, I don't want to put it this way, I don't think, Scott, that people voted for a war in Iran. I don't think they voted to enact tariffs, which have dried up soybean farmers' markets. Most corn farmers also grow soybeans. That's pretty typical. And they have lost some of their markets. They used to sell $12 billion of soybeans to China every year. Last year it was zero because of tariffs. So I want to see them focus on that, whether it's a rural economy, which has been hurt, or whether it's the economy in central Ohio and suburbs and in the cities in Marion or Mansfield or Columbus. They just lost focus. It's not what people voted for.
Final question for you today, Senator Brown. A Republican PAC is spending $79 million to support John Husted, the largest investment, a largest commitment in eight key states. Why do you think they're spending so much money here in Ohio to keep Husted in place?
Because John Husted is a special interest guy whom they like. In contrast to that, I've spent years on standing up to the drug companies, bringing insulin prices, capping them at $35. I've spent my career taking on Wall Street and taking on the oil companies and taking on the drug companies. And John Husted has been their guy, whether it's higher energy prices, whether it's higher drug prices, whether it's voting with insurance interest against keeping the premium rates for people with the Affordable Care Act insurance. 120,000 people dropped their insurance because John Husted nine times voted against keeping insurance rates from going up. So it's pretty clear they love him. They don't like me. And so they're spending $79 million that they're given from Wall Street and crypto and the drug companies and the oil companies.
Senator Brown, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I know you're very busy, and to have these few minutes is great, and I hope you can come back real soon.
As you are too busy, so thanks, Scott.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Former Senator here from the great state of Ohio, Sherrod Brown. Well, what a show today. Former Governor Ted Strickland, former United States Representative Jim Renacci, and former Senator Sherrod Brown, currently running for the Senate seat here in the state of Ohio. What a morning. Hey, you can't say both sides weren't represented this morning or this week on this particular program. Voice of a People with Linda Sims comes up next. Adam the Computer Guy at 12 noon today. And we thank you for listening. Tomorrow we'll be back from 8 a.m. until 1 in the afternoon and 8 to 10 tomorrow night. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
You're listening to The Talking Place. Just listen to former star of The Jeffersons and 227, Marla Gibb.